and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Seth Kulin, the creator of PodeSketch, and we're going to talk about designing templates today. This episode is brought to you by userlist.io, a new tool for sending event-based email to your SaaS users. Overwhelmed with existing automation tools? Try this simple solution for converting free trials, user onboarding, and promoting specific features in your web application. To learn more, join the waiting list at userlist.io. Hi, Seth.
Hi, Jane. Thanks so much for having me on.
We're thrilled to have you here. We're going to start with a short Blitz questionnaire to learn more about you personally, and then continue to the main topic. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
And question number one is, what do you do for a living?
Yeah, I am a independent UI UX designer. I live in Cleveland, Ohio, and most of my time in work is spent building mobile and web apps for startups and SaaS products and agencies who either need to improve their look and feel and design of their current app or starting fresh on a new app.
Awesome. What is your background story? How did you get there?
Yeah, so I kind of stumbled into it. In college, I was working at a laundromat, and I someone had come in, and we were just talking casually, you know, about my studies and what I was doing in school, and I had taken, you know, an introduction to like web design, or I forget what it was, but it was a very introductory level, you know, design course for web design. And the customer, he was saying, oh, well, I actually have a business and I have a really bad website. And you seem like a, you know, a smart young whippersnapper. How about you redesign my website for me? And I was a little, you know, unsure about it, but he was like, yeah, it'll be great. I'll pay you for it. Pay you $1,000 to do it. And even though I didn't really have any idea about how to go about it, I immediately agreed, because $1,000 to a college student is kind of like hitting the lottery. So I hastily agreed and I said, yes, I'll do it. And so I had a little bit of knowledge of just basically where to start, you know, how can I like look this up? How can I, you know, how to build a website, and just basically taught myself from just Googling and watching YouTube and looking at Stack Overflow, and successfully launched that website for that gentleman. And then after that, I was like, wow, this could be really cool. Like, what if I just went and went around town and tried to get other people to let me build their website or redesign their site? So after that, I printed off flyers and I went to every business that I could think of in town, just trying to, you know, let me build someone's website for them. And I had, you know, looking back, it's kind of funny. I had like absolutely no concept or idea of like how things worked. So I was going to like places like H&R Block and be like, hey, you guys need a website? And they're like, you know, obviously this huge multinational brand. And they're like, I think that's handled elsewhere. But through that, I was able to pick up a handful of just like local clients and quit my job at the laundromat and just do websites for the remaining years of my college. And you know, that helped me build up enough of a portfolio to land an agency job after right after college. So it was a really great segue into a career.
I wonder, what did you actually go to college for?
So I went to college for marketing, and a few of my classes gave me a taste for web and UI design and development. So that was, kind of related, but yeah, definitely took more of a turn for the design, web design part of things.
Great story. And marketing definitely never hurts in our online activity. What does your typical day look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. Previously, when I first went full-time freelance, my wife was still working at the time, and we didn't have a child at the time. So my schedule looked pretty similar to what her schedule was, where we would get up fairly early in the morning, go about our day, and be done around dinner time. And, you know, that was great. I was able, you know, to work from home and get all the things I needed to get done in, you know, a flexible manner. And then, you know, we would, you know, kind of be on the same schedule for that. The really nice thing about, you know, being freelance and being flexible is that after we had our son, he's about 4 months old now.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. You know, our schedules change a bit with
the baby getting
up and
right.
Having to get up in the middle of the night and, you know, tend to him. So our schedules changed a bit to where we don't get up nearly as early. We get up a little bit later in the morning, play with him in bed for a few minutes, and, you know, maybe we'll have coffee or breakfast. And then probably around 9, I get started with my day and work for a few hours, have lunch, maybe go for a walk, and then I usually try to get in 3 or 4 hours in the afternoon. And then, after that, typically at night, I'll try to sneak in an hour as everyone's going to bed and, you know, getting ready for the next day. So my day's a bit chopped up. I don't have a very hard and fast, this is when I'm working, this is when I'm not working, like some people do. But I think part of the enjoyment of being freelance is being able to be flexible. So if that means in the middle of the day, I, you know, don't want to work or don't want to be doing client work, I can spend time with my family. But it also means at night, I don't feel bad about, you know, pulling out the laptop if we're just watching TV or catching up on emails or things like that.
I hear you all too well. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
Ooh, that's a good question. I really enjoy, starting new projects, getting that initial excitement of getting into a project. And I feel like, you know, whenever you start a project, it feels like you start off, you have all this momentum, and you have like 75% of the project done, like very early in the actual timeline of things. And it's usually like the last 20% of the project that takes the longest and is, in some sense, the most painful to get it to the finish line.
And the last 5% take 95% of the time, the Pareto.
Exactly. So I think, probably to answer your question, I really enjoy kind of the start and the middle of the projects, and probably the least favorite is just, you know, closing out a project while keeping all of, you know, your ideas and thoughts and aspirations, and keeping those in line with the clients can sometimes be a challenge. So maybe the last 5% of the project is probably the hardest or the least favorite part of my time.
Interesting. This is a very unique answer. Did you know a lot of people say they don't like bookkeeping, you know, and paperwork and stuff like that.
I don't like that either.
Here. No, it's not even questionable that anybody likes that, because who can? No, but your answer, I love that, because it can be so hard to wrap up projects when there are new projects looming on the horizon, so lucrative.
Oh, absolutely. I have that shiny object syndrome, where I always like to think about the next idea or the next thing to work on.
Absolutely. What is your next big thing?
Ooh, that's a good question. So I have a few larger ideas for my product BootSketch that would be extensions and improvements upon the current framework. So I can't tell too much about that now, but I think there's going to be some really useful things coming out of BootSketch that's going to help designers build sites even faster.
Fantastic. Well, let's go back to our main topic. And the reason why we're here today is because you've recently, I don't know exactly if really recently, launched a very successful product for designers, which is called BootSketch. Well, can you tell us more what it is and how you launched it?
Yeah, absolutely. So BootSketch is a sketch design file that takes all of the elements from Bootstrap and it recreates them in a resizable, user-friendly way in Sketch, so that you can pull in all of those design elements and use them across your design file. And this was one of the things that, like, a lot of times when I would be designing a site for a company or for an agency, the developers would a lot of times be using Bootstrap for their front-end development framework, as, you know, most front-end developers use. And I found myself recreating a lot of the elements within Bootstrap, just so that I could be on the same page with the developers. So I would, you know, always have to recreate the forms, the buttons, the modals. And I was like, huh, this would be really useful if I just, you know, built Bootstrap in Sketch. So I started off kind of, you know, pulling in these elements and just planning to use it for like my base framework for when I, you know, start designing new sites, just so that me and the, you know, the developers were kind of on the same page. And the more I got into it, I was like, huh, I think this could actually be really useful for other people. And I had seen a few attempts at, you know, pulling in the Bootstrap components into a Sketch file, but nothing was really like polished or useful in the way that I wanted to make it. So I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to make a, you know, product out of this and see if other people would find it useful. So this was absolutely one of those same things where I was super pumped to start building it and was, you know, had a lot of head of steam. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to do this. And then probably about halfway through, I was like, oh, all of these other ideas are popping into my head about other projects and whatnot. So I kind of just had to like sit myself down and be like, no matter what, you're going to finish this. Like, so I marked a day a few weeks out in the calendar and I was like, no matter what, even if you have to stay up like three nights in a row, you know, cancel a project, whatever, like you're going to launch this just so that you can like say that you had the discipline to launch a product. And no matter if nobody buys it, Or if everyone hates it, like, you're just going to launch it just so you can, like, have something under your belt that you said, like, I launched a product. So I eventually, you know, launched it, put it on Designer News, put it on a few other sites, and, you know, just to kind of get initial feedback. And it was way more popular than I thought it was going to be, or way more useful in what people were, you know, saying. And as I would see people, you know, purchase and download the file, I was really surprised that it was, you know, as useful as, you know, everyone else was using it for. So.
Awesome. Was it your first product? You as a marketer know that big product successes don't usually go like from I shared it on Designer News and there that's when it took off. I don't quite believe in this magic. Did you have some audience built up already for that product?
So other than, you know, just my network on Twitter, which isn't large at all, and probably the majority of people who follow me are just, you know, friends and family and people from, you know, my community. But I had basically, you know, just tried to share it on all of the platforms that I had a voice on. And I got a few more popular people to like retweet it. And then I put it on, or actually got picked up by the Sketch newsletter.
There we go. There we go.
Exactly. So, it was really one of those things where it was just kind of like, try to get it out in whatever like avenue you can and just hope that someone picks it up. Someone, you know, popular retweets it or picks it up. And so it got picked up in the Sketch newsletter. Mark Otto, the creator of Bootstrap, actually retweeted it and put some comments around it. So that was, you know, Sketch and Mark's tweet and putting it on Product Hunt were probably the three biggest things that helped launch it and like get that initial huge traction.
So I have to confess, I have not opened Bootsketch in Sketch. What do you have in there? Tell us more. I think every designer has their own secret sauce about working with Sketch, with their little, you know, synchronizations, auto-updating styles and stuff like that. What did you use particularly handy in Bootsketch? What do you have in it?
Yeah. So in Bootsketch, really what I try to do is be very meticulous about every single component so that everything is really resizable and you can't really like break it unless you, you know, break apart the symbol. So basically in everything you can, you know, make it as wide as you want or as tall as you want and the symbol's still going to look good. So in addition to that, there's also what I tried to make is really user-friendly overrides. So when you click into a symbol, if you want to turn elements off or add in different content or, you know, do things like that, everything's organized in a like a very deliberate way so that you can, you know, override things super, super seamlessly and super user-friendly way. In addition to that, I also have all of the colors and typography and fonts all linked up so that if you want to change your branding from the, you know, the default Bootstrap branding, you don't have to go into every single symbol or component. You can just highlight all of the colors or all of the fonts. And then everything in the whole library will update in just a few clicks. So those are probably like the biggest things is that you can, you know, really pull in all of the components and you can't really break them. They're all really super user friendly. And then a lot of people don't like their sites to end up looking like default Bootstrap. So I give it a way to be really easily customizable. So I think those two things are just really handy to get up and running with a site design without having to recreate a lot of the things that you're always going to have to, you know, recreate.
It's a great strategy. I have my own little file, for example, because I find myself, you know, redrawing drop-down menus, pagination, and everything like that all over again before each new web app. But your idea of recreating a whole big library is totally brilliant. Does it feel like you, I don't know if it's an ethical question to ask, but doesn't it feel like you owe something to Bootstrap for creating the framework itself, since you're kind of thriving off their ecosystem to a certain extent?
Yeah, yeah. So that's an interesting thing. When I posted it on Designer News, someone commented and they said, "Is this even legal?"
Well, I didn't ask that, but
yeah. Right. So, you know, with that, I was like, huh, I could see if someone thinking about that or like having questions in their mind about that. But you know, the amazing thing with people who make, you know, open source technology like Bootstrap is, you know, when something's under, that MIT license, like it would be completely within someone's right to just fork Bootstrap and then put up a paywall and, you know,
and it will still be fine.
Make their own. Yeah. If they called it like, you know, call it something different, cause it's, you know, free to use, free to distribute, free to do whatever you want with it. But with mine, I definitely owe Bootstrap, a debt of gratitude. And if anyone from the Bootstrap community or anyone who's contributed to that, or any of the, you know, main contributors ever want anything from me, I will be glad to
pay the dues.
Pay whatever dues. Because they definitely paved the way for me to make this. So, yeah, if they ever want Bootsketch for free, or if they want anything from me, then I'll be happy to help them out in whatever way I can.
You're naming. Yeah, please go ahead.
One thing I also wanted to say along those lines is, I kind of felt like as I was building this, that the you know, design asset ecosystem is a pretty saturated field. So it's like there are people producing like beautiful, amazing UI kits and libraries every single day, and they're launching it for free and giving it, you know, giving it away for free, whether it's on Dribbble or wherever. And you know, it's kind of crazy. It's like, how can you even stand out in something where people give away so many awesome resources for free? And I think, you know, part of it being something that's familiar, where people know what Bootstrap is, and they know that developers use it on a lot of things. I think tying its identity to something that's very familiar was also really helpful in the launch, because people, you know, basically knew what they were getting. They didn't have to be educated on what it was, because they are familiar with a lot of the components in it. So I think that was something that was, you know, definitely like strategic and helpful, rather than just launching random UI kit, you know, number 1000, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It links to reality real strong, as opposed to all these amazing, highly aesthetic kits Exactly, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. Your naming is also pretty brilliant. Did you come up with the name yourself?
I did. I think it was, you know, I was like, huh, Bootstrap and Sketch. Let's see if that's available as like a domain. And the domain was available, and I was like, okay, we're going with it. You know, don't need to think too much harder about it.
That's a great approach with things, by the way. Everyone listen to that, because should you spend, you know, 2 months brainstorming the name, that would have been a different story.
Exactly.
Since you touched on the question of price, you mentioned that there are a lot of things available for free, but you put a price tag on your product, and as I can see, it's $29. How did you pick that price? You could have made it $59 easily. Why 29?
Yeah, so I actually launched it the whole price conversation is also really interesting, because I think when you put a price on something, that gives it inherent value, just like psychologically. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
There are, like we said, amazing frameworks that are for free, and those are super thankful for like all that. I benefited from those. I've made a few free ones. But I think there comes like a level of accountability for the creator when you put a price tag on it, and there comes a level of inherent value. So it's almost like, in a way, it's like you build trust with people, because it's like, if I'm paying for this, it better be good. And people are, you know, feel free to email me, ask me questions, or to ask for improvements, or to ask when, you know, an update's coming, and they're completely within their right, because, you know, they paid money for a product. And then basically how I got to that point is, I felt like that was a good starting point for, you know, a UI framework. It doesn't necessarily give you like headers and footers and built out sections like some libraries do, but it gives you everything you need to build those. So just from my evaluation of, you know, many different UI kits, I felt like that was a pretty good price point. But when I launched it, I put a handful of coupons around the place just to see if people would, you know, bite. So when I put it on Designer News, I think it was $9, you know, to initially buy it.
Oh.
So mm-hmm. I really just wanted to, you know, get a handful of people to check it out and to give me feedback and, you know, hey, was this worth $9 to you? And the response was like, yeah, if everything works the way you say it works, this is definitely worth the price. So yeah, that was, you know, just kind of confirming to me that this was a pretty good price point. And I think it'll probably, you know, stay around this with the exception of a handful of coupons here or there for, you know, different communities. So yeah.
Let's go back a little bit to the actual to actually designing the framework. Have you been inspired by anything else that you use yourself, or by your personal, you know, libraries that you've been creating before? Because there is a number of ways you can go about it.
In making Bootsketch, or the way that I created the components.
I guess both about the way you approached the structure of Bootsketch, was that influenced by your experience with some other templates that you purchased or made before?
Mm. So I think like a lot of what I did is I tried to make it very user-friendly with the plugin SketchRunner. So SketchRunner is kind of like Finder, but for Sketch. Mm-hmm. So basically all of the naming conventions I made so that you could pull up very quickly within that rather than having to use the dropdown symbol finder. There are other handful of UI kits that use like emojis as symbol override identifiers. So definitely took like a page from that playbook so that instead of just saying like breadcrumb, you know, override, if you click on the breadcrumbs, it has an actually like loaf of bread emoji, you know, just to kind of make it more fun and more playful for the user to identify. So, there's a lot of fun things that you can do with Sketch and a lot of like really cool customizations that you can take it to the next level to make it more enjoyable for the end user.
I cannot not ask about resizing buttons. What is the solution for that?
Yeah, so buttons can definitely be tricky. I'm kind of torn between the way of, you know, do you constrain the height? Do you, you know, let it be resized infinitely? But basically how I have it set up now is if you type into the button and if it goes across the, you know, if it goes outside of the width of the button, it won't break, but it will just the text will be hidden on either side until you resize it. So I feel like that's the most flexible way to, you know, just have a button that you can type into it, get it to whatever font you need in it or whatever words you need in it, and then you can resize it to those and it will look fine after you resize it.
So essentially you're defaulting to larger buttons that have some text in the middle of it instead of, you know, fitting text tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you can resize it to whatever you want and the text won't break or like it won't go to the next line. It will just be hidden behind the button. So you just know, hey, I'm just going to resize this and give it whatever padding I want it to have. And, you know, that way it always looks good from as long as the padding is outside of the text.
Mm-hmm, definitely. One more thing I'd love to discuss. You know, I need my own podcast to discuss things like that. But but Sketch has these amazing system of auto-synchronized font styles. But in case you need, you know, different alignment for the same font, you need to create a separate style for that, which mm-hmm. drives me crazy. Maybe you have a nice workaround for that.
Yeah, so that is definitely a bummer because, yeah, if you want it centered aligned versus like left aligned, you have to create a whole like new text style. So actually what I did is I made every single one of those for like every single header, paragraph, display text. I made a mm-hmm. left, center, and right aligned mm-hmm. version of it. But then I also made those all symbols. So for instance, if you say like, I want a, you know, an H1 header and it's center aligned. If you want to change that to a left aligned one, you can do that right over in the, right above the mm-hmm. override panel. So you don't have to like drop down, go through all your font styles.
You can swap out this symbol for another one.
Exactly. So you can swap out anything that's on that level of that symbol. So right now I'm looking at an H1 dark center. So it's like a black header that's center aligned. Right at my fingertips, I have the left and right aligned that I can just in one click get to. So in my opinion, that's the easiest way for me to deal with font styles in in Sketch, rather than having to go through the long drop down. If I make it a symbol, I can just toggle in one click, right, left, or centered.
I wonder, I don't know exactly how developers interact with our Sketch files, but I've always been wondering if that, you know, multi-level use of symbols, whether that's actually irritating them a lot because they can't just click through to the parameters of a single thing, but they have to, I don't know, calculate or dig into a few levels of symbols. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so the way that I typically work with developer handoff is previously I had worked a lot with this plugin called Marquetch, and it's not a very popular plugin. It doesn't have a lot of like promotion around it, but it is really nice to like be able to export an artboard, and it gives you an HTML file that the developer can inspect.
Is that similar to Zeppelin to a certain extent?
Yeah, so it's similar to Zeppelin. And more recently, I just finished a project where I used Envision Inspect, the inspect option within Envision. And that's just like a little menu area where basically, yeah, very similar to Zeppelin, where you can go through and click, get the parameters, the colors, the CSS for each particular element. And that worked really well. I think that works a little better than giving your developer, you know, access to the Sketch file where they have to kind of dig through and click through the symbols. Because this kind of flattens everything and lets them just click directly on it. And they don't need to worry about symbols or nested symbols or textiles. They can just, click through your style guide.
Awesome. So we're wrapping up today's episode. And one of my last questions would be, if you were to start another framework, what would you do differently as opposed to, you know, the journey that you had with Bootsketch?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know, because everything is kind of gone better than I expected. So if I had to do something different, I don't know at that point. What I would like to do is keep expanding Bootsketch to keep being more useful to designers. So I don't know. I think I would really like to ask for feedback for anyone who's used Bootsketch or tested it out or anything. We've released a handful of updates to the framework based on user feedback, which has been really helpful. But yeah, I mean, anyone who has it is definitely, you know, able to contribute and get their voice heard and get updates that they would want to see. So in terms of releasing another product update, I'm not totally sure what I would do different other than, you know, I would just advise to anyone who's out there looking to build something similar is, you know, build something that's useful for you. And if it's useful for your process, it will likely be useful for others. And, you know, once you get like something raw, something that you can give to your coworkers or give to your friends in the same arena, like you might very well have something that you could sell for, you know, something $10, $15, $20, $30 that other developers or designers would find useful. But yeah, just listening to user feedback and trying to solve problems that, kind of going really deep into one problem and solving it so that when someone, you know, pulls up their Sketch file, it's like, oh, I found the solution that I don't need to spend 45 minutes doing on my own. I can just use this forever, you know?
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, thank you so much for sharing your insight today. It was very interesting to hear your story. Where can people find you online, and where can they find Bootsketch?
Yeah, so you can find me personally on Twitter at What's New SAES, What's New SAES.
What does it stand for? What does it stand for?
Yeah, so that was actually a nickname that an old boss called me when I was in college, and it was just something that he would always say to me, "What's new, SAES?" And my friends actually picked it up, and so a lot of my friends just started calling me SAES. And so, yeah, that's just kind of how my Twitter handle originated, and it's obviously not something that it was something that was always available for like a username. So yeah, that's where I'm at on Twitter. You can find my personal website at SethKulin.com. I'm sure you can link that up in the show notes.
Absolutely.
And and then Bootsketch, you can find that at Bootsketch.com. And yeah, I'll be giving the UI Breakfast community a coupon code for that as well. So if anyone listening finds it interesting, you can enjoy a coupon for that.
Yes, we have that. I'm going to include in the show notes. We are getting 20% off using the coupon code UI Breakfast on checkout, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you much, Seth, for your time, your advice today. Hope you inspire our listeners to create something and possibly sell it on their own. And I hope your Bootsketch framework grows.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was a blast.
Fantastic. Have a great day.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.